भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Vishnupadaya Krishna Vasai Buddhali Shivati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunnivari Pastata Desha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, chapter 16, verse 48. Paravara gati gaya sarva ajakshaya te namaha avishvaya cha avishvaya tad Drastre Sya Cha Hitave Paravaragati Gaya Savajakshaya Te Namaha Avishvaya Cha Vishvaya Tadrastresya Chahitave Paravaragati Gaya Sarajakshaya Te Namaha Avishvaya Cha Vishvaya Tadrastresya Chahitave Para avara, of all things, both superior and inferior. Gati, destinations. Gyaya, to him who knows. Sarva, of all things. Ajakshaya, to the regulator. Te, you. Namaha. Our obeisances. Avishvaya. Who is distinct from the universe. Cha. And. Vishvaya. In whom the illusion of material creation manifests. Tatndrastre. To the witness of illusion. Asya. Of this world, cha. And hetave, to the root cause. Translation, obeisance is unto you who know the destination of all things, superior and inferior, and who are the presiding regulator of all that be. You are distinct from the universe of creation, yet you are the basis upon which the illusion of material creation evolves, and also the witness of this illusion. Indeed, you are the root cause of the entire world. Purport, the words para and avara indicate superior subtle elements and inferior gross elements. The words also indicate superior personalities, devotees of the Lord, and inferior personalities who are unaware of the glories of the Lord. Lord Krishna knows the destiny of all superior and inferior entities, animate and inanimate, and as the supreme absolute truth, he remains in his unique position above everything as indicated by the word sarv ajakshaya. Translation, obeisance is unto you who know the destination of all things, superior and inferior, and who are the presiding regulator of all that be. You are distinct from the universal creation, and yet you are the basis upon which the illusion of material creation evolves, and also the witness of this illusion. Indeed, you were the root cause of the entire world. So this again is a glorification of the unique powers of Krishna as God, as the supreme controller of everything and the supreme knower of everything. So as I mentioned earlier, this is of course very good, because the jiva has to recognize the difference between God and himself. And for that reason, in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, and in all scriptures of the world, there is a great emphasis upon the greatness of God as opposed to the inferiority of the jivas, of the living entities. We are small and God is great. Huh? So this is prominent in all religions of the world, except maybe Buddhism. So the importance of that is to distinguish God from jiva. As Lord Chaitanya says, we are Nitya Krishna Das, we are only the servants. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also, first of all, talks all about Atma for 6 chapters, actually, and doesn't even mention himself much at all. So he talks about, you are different from your body, you are different from your body. And then he says, I am supreme, after that. So, several factors there. One is, Atma is different from body and material nature, and God is different from jiva. So these are very basic elements of knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and of philosophy, and essential to the Vaishnava understanding of scriptures. So here we have the wives of Kaliya praising the Lord, and obviously they are devotees, because they recognize all these wonderful qualities of the Lord. So he is called Para Avara Gati Gyaya. That means obeisances unto he who knows the destination of the superior and the inferior. So of course superior and inferior can mean many things. It can mean subtle and gross. It can mean spiritual and material. It can mean devotee and non-devotee. It has many, many different meanings. And all of them are appropriate. The emphasis is upon the Lord knows everything. The only problem, of course, is with knowing about the living entities is that if he knows everything about the living entities and all their destinations, then it means that everything is predestined. And then how can we choose anything? If he already knows everything, the whole future is laid out for us in a very methodical way, then what is the how does free will operate within that at all? Of course, that is a difficult question, because over and over we see that the scriptures say the Lord is omniscient, he knows everything, past, present, future, etc. So I don't know if there's any specific answer to that, and whether the Acharyas address that problem or not. But they do say that he knows everything. At the same time, they also say there is free will for the jiva. And it's not that certain ones are only destined to be devotees, and they will be devotees, and others are destined eternally to be asuras or whatever. There is some free will at operation for the jivas. So within the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, by his inconceivable potencies, he allows for the choice of the jiva. So he knows everything, but he also allows for choice. Whether he knows that choice or not, that's up to him. But nevertheless, he allows the choice of the jiva within all of his knowledge. So therefore, there is no idea of complete fatalism here, and that the jiva is completely bound up by somebody else's will. So by definition, the jiva is has got some minute independence. That means he has he is a center of consciousness, and he chooses. And because he chooses, he is responsible, and because he's responsible, he gets karma. So, if the jiva had no independence and everything was predestined, then there would be no sense of having karma, because what are we supposed to learn? Everything's predestined, everything would be automatic, so there's no sense of having karma at all. So the very existence of karma in this world means that there is some choice for the jiva. And by that choice, he chooses things and becomes responsible for his actions. So therefore, it's though the Lord knows everything, at the same time, he allows for individuality. So that applies not only to the material world. Of course, in the material world, it's very perplexing for us anyway, because we're covered by illusion and we really don't know what is time. We don't know what is free will. We don't know what is responsibility. We don't even know what the jiva is or the movements of material nature. So if we don't understand, it is very, it's actually understandable we don't understand, because we're in such ignorance. But the same fact exists for the devotees in the spiritual world. They still have individuality. They still have free will, in spite of the fact that they're in the spiritual world there, and we can say that Krishna is the Lord of the spiritual world. He controls everything by his yoga maya potency, and everybody's in the leela of the Lord. Nevertheless, the individuality of the nitya-siddha devotees is also always operating. And so they do have the independence in the spiritual world also. The only difference between that individuality and this individuality is that they don't make mistakes. And they don't make wrong choices. And the reason is that they are 100% as jiva. Their essence of of the jiva is dedicated only to Krishna, only to the Supreme Lord. And they do not deviate at any time from that consciousness. So all of their free will choices are within that attachment, 100% attachment to the Lord. So they can make choices within that, and that gives rise to the pastimes of the Lord. He allows that, and within that flexibility of the jiva's free will, he allows pastimes to go on. And even the Supreme Lord, he is the supreme independent. Yet even Krishna, who is, of course, Swayam Bhagavan, supreme among all the other among all the forms of God, and even he can put yoga maya over Balaram, even he sometimes allows himself to get covered by yoga maya. And he becomes surprised by the potency of his own energies when he sees these energies operating. So he allows even his energies to take control of the situation at times, even though he's a supreme independent. How is this? Because everything is, of course, operating in cooperation with Krishna. All the spiritual energies are the 100% dedicated servants of Krishna, and they are carrying out his pastimes with devotion. So he lets them do it. And then they surprise him also. Oh, what is he doing? What are these energies are doing? So even Krishna, we say he's independent and supremely independent, but yet he allows things to go on under the yoga maya potency and the other shaktis. Therefore, this idea of free will, independence, and everything is there. At this time, it's very flexible in the spiritual world because of the dedication of everyone there to the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's great devotion to his devotees. So, for instance, in when Krishna and the cowherd boys went out in the forest one day, and Balaram wasn't there, then they saw in the forest this huge thing. And they said, "What is this?" the cowherd boy said. And they looked up in the air, and it was towering up into the sky, up into the clouds. And some said, "Hey, it looks like a snake. It's a big snake. And he's got his mouth open. And he's got big teeth. And he's got a big tongue sticking out. And it looks like a big road lying across the path. So what are we going to do?" And something, maybe it's not a snake, maybe it's a plaything. So they were debating in different ways. What is this huge thing? Some said it must be an asura, whatever. He's going to try to swallow us up, whatever. So they were debating as they walked towards the snake, and Krishna was also watching that, and he was thinking, well, yes, this is a big asura. These cowherd boys should not go in there. And he was watching, and then the cowherd boys ran right into the snake along with all the cows, and they ran right in there. And Krishna was watching in astonishment. And he says, how is this happening? And he was going to say something, he couldn't say anything. He kind of do something, he couldn't do anything. And he was astonished. He says, how is this? I cannot do anything. I'm helpless. And then he was astonished because, my shaktis are working. Huh? They want this to happen. Huh? They want the boys to go in there so that I will do something. And I will kill this demon. I'll have to go into the demon and kill him. So he was astonished by the potency of his own shaktis. He could not call out to the cowherd boys and tell them to stop. He could not do anything. And he just watched as they marched into the demon's mouth. So Krishna himself becomes astonished by the power of his own shaktis. And similarly, when Mother Yasoda was looking, trying to look in Krishna's mouth for the see if he had eaten dirt. Krishna didn't do anything, actually. He was just thinking, well, Mother Yasoda is going to look in my mouth, and then she's going to see the dirt, and then she's going to punish me. So I better do something. But he didn't actually think what I'll do. He just opened his mouth, and then automatically his Aishwarya Shakti manifested the universe within him. So in cooperation with the Lord, all these Shaktis simply do things. And Krishna becomes astonished. Similarly, in the Ras Lila, the first night of the Ras Lila, it's described there that the conditions of the Ras Lila, how it was the most beautiful night of autumn, and it was nice and cool out, and the moon rose on the eastern horizon, all red and full, big circle of redness, and the flowers were in blossom, and the winds were gently blowing that fragrance all over the place in the forest. So it was an ideal setting. And the way it is described, it's described that the Ras Lila itself made all these arrangements. Not Krishna. But the Ras Lila itself decided this is the time to do everything. It made all the arrangements and brought the gopis there, the most beautiful women of all the universes combined, and brought them all there. So everything was favorable. And it was all arrangements of Rasalila personified. So, in other words, Krishna gives these, even as Shaktis, who are also personalities, gives them independence to act in the spiritual world. And then he becomes surprised by their devotion and what they do in order to please him. So therefore, Krishna is the eternal knower of everything. So therefore, he won't be surprised by anything that happens. And then everything would get very boring. Because he knows everything. Every day is going on like this. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And, but he becomes surprised even by what his shaktis do. He allows his shaktis to work, and then they do things. And he's surprised. And pleased, of course, by all the different things that the shaktis do. Or similarly, when after they killed Agasura, after Krishna killed Agasura by expanding himself in the Agasura's mouth, and then killed Agasura, all the boys came out. So then the boys were outside and they were having a nice time, and then they got hungry. So they all found a nice place in the forest, and they all sat down around Krishna, and they began to unpacked their lunches. They all had packed up, mothers had packed up little lunches, and they tied them in cloth and hung them on their shoulders with sticks. So they all came to the forest with their lunch packs, and they all sat down. Krishna was in the center, and by his potency, though he was in the center, everybody thought that Krishna was facing him, and nobody saw his back. But all the boys were all around, and of course there were, millions and millions of boys also. So Krishna was in the center, like the center of a lotus.
And so they all opened up their lunch packs, and they began to look at their lunches and taste different foods like that. And then they began exchanging the foods. Ah, this is very nice. Taste this one. And all the boys were doing that. And Krishna was also exchanging food with the different boys. Huh? And then he said, oh, look, here come some monkeys. I think the monkeys are going to steal our food here. And then he was desiring, maybe we should have some fun during this lunch. Maybe the monkeys will steal something and interrupt our lunch like that. But then his Shaktis were sitting there. His Leela Shakti was there. And thought, we should have some different Leela today. Not just monkeys and animals and birds and whatever in the lunch. So, at that time, Brahma had come down. Because Brahma was astonished when he heard the sounds of the Devatas and the Gandharvas and the Rishis. They were all praising Krishna after he killed Agasura. Because when Agasura was killed, he merged into Krishna. And then he got Sarupya Mukti. He was given a form of Vishnu in the spiritual world. So the Devatas were astonished by that, and everything began praising him and like that. And the praises went up to the higher planets, you know, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. It was going up, the sound was going up and up. And then Brahma heard it. And he says, what are they all praising? And then he heard, oh yeah, they're praising Krishna. And then he thought, oh, I wonder what's so great. Why are they praising him so much? Huh? So then Brahma came down to earth at that time to see Krishna. Huh? And so he approached the cowherd boys and Krishna as they were eating in the forest. And so it is Leela Shakti that brought Brahma down there right in front of Krishna. And then when Brahma saw that, then he was so astonished when he saw Krishna, because Krishna didn't look like God at all. The Devatas were praising how great he is, etc. And then when he saw Krishna, Krishna was just a little boy. And Brahma was used to seeing the, you know, the Purusha, the form of Vishnu with four hands, huge form, being worshipped by all the Rishis and the Vedas and the sages and everything. And all he saw was a little boy there eating food with his friends. And even wasn't it clean, he had food all over his body and food in his left hand, food in his right hand, and eating like this. So he became very shocked. He said, how can this be God? And for that, then he said, I will test him. So all the Brahma was brought in there to do all of this by the Leela Shakti. Leela Shakti, let's have some fun today. Let's surprise, make a big interruption to the meal. And the interruption was so great that it lasted for 1 year. Because only 1 year later, the cowherd boys came back and told their parents about Agasura getting killed. And that was because Brahma had taken all the cowherd boys and put them in the cave, and then Krishna expanded all the cowherd boys. So there's a big interruption to that lunch for 1 year. So this was all arranged by the Leela Shakti. And then Yoga Maya Potency. So in this way, in the spiritual world, there's great variety. Even though Krishna knows everything, at the same time, even he gets surprised by the Leelas and the energies, how they act in the spiritual world. So he gives independence there to his own energies, in spite of the fact that he is supreme controller. So this goes for his other devotees also. Though Krishna is all-knowing and supreme controller, all the devotees there are acting with their free will, and every leela that they experience is ever fresh. It's always surprising. So it's said in Sanskrit that it's all chamatkara, which means astonishing. And of course, astonishment is also a rasa, adbhuta rasa. There is an astonishing rasa. But all of the activities of the spiritual world are astonishing in the sense that every time they experience them, it is new. It is different. It's not that, we felt like this yesterday. we know about this because we saw it yesterday. Every time they see Krishna, it's different. Every time they have an experience or a leela, it's different. And it's always ever fresh. And Krishna's form is ever fresh. Every time they see Krishna, it's different. And they become more attractive to Krishna. So this is the nature of the spiritual world, that in spite of the fact that there's all knowledge and everything is under Krishna, there's always freshness and surprise or whatever. Due to the nature of the Supreme Lord. So, though we say he's all-knowledgeable and all-powerful, we should never think of him as an absolute controller and absolute knowledge, and everything has to go exactly in this way. It's not like that. It's not that everything is in a very regulated fashion like that. It's under the potency of the Supreme Lord, and there's always variety there, and always bliss in the spiritual world. As far as the material world is concerned, in one sense, there is a regularity, because for most of the jivas, everything is predictable, because there's so much in ignorance. And the laws of karma are predictable. You do a sinful act, you get a suffering. You do a pious act, you get an enjoyment. So that part's predictable. And most jivas never escape from their, in ignorance especially, to operate with their free will. So the plants and animals don't have free will. They don't have enough intelligence. So everything's out. That is planned out. Everything is planned out there. The only thing that's not planned out for them is when the human beings get involved with them and they start killing them or doing whatever. That's not the plan. Everything else is planned out for them, whatever. But when the human beings involve themselves unnecessarily in the lives of all these plants and animals, then we get problems. And the human being gets karma for that. Otherwise, everything's predictably going on for them. When we come to the human species, we're supposed to have intelligence. And therefore, there's an element of unpredictability there by nature, because we got the free will, etc. However, if we're like the animals and we still have ignorance and we don't use our intelligence properly, it all becomes predictable because we operate according to the laws of karma there. And those laws are predictable. So if you don't act right, you can get the result. You can just get the same type of results predictably in the world. So in this way, the world goes on. And unfortunately, it is very slow for the human being jivas who are in ignorance to get out of that ignorance. And they continue kind of in that mode. If they're lucky, they continue as human beings. If they're unlucky and they start doing worse activities and they go lower and lower, then they go out of the human species completely and they drop down, because they don't have the capacity for any type of knowledge. So if they're lucky, they just go on as an ignorant human being. And they can do this for millions of years, go on for the whole day of Brahma, or whole lifetime of Brahma, wandering in the material world. If they're a little luckier, then they can go up. But if they go up, they also go down again. And so they wander. This is what is called wandering in the material world. So the scriptures describe that sometimes they're in the Devalokas and sometimes in the hellish planets, sometimes they're in the human species, sometimes in others. And they wander around like this. So it's basically aimless. And aimless is caused because they don't know their destination. They don't know where they're supposed to go. They're thinking, yes, we want to be happy. And they strive, but they don't really know. So they strive for different goals in the material world and think that is happiness. So when it says here, the Lord knows the goal of the jivas. And what is that goal? The goal is there, but it's not that he is making them achieve the highest goal. They have their goals, he knows what those are, and he will give them to them. This jiva wants this particular thing, so we'll let him give it according to, well, he can achieve that according to karma. If he wants this type of happiness, he can get it. He also gets the karma. He gets the limitations. So in that sense, the Lord knows the gati of the jivas. He knows their desires, he knows exactly what they want, and he fulfills those desires. But in accordance with karma also. And that's how he controls their destination also. The desire is there, he fulfills the desire, but he puts a limitation in terms of your body through karma. And that is fixed by their previous activities. In this sense, the Lord knows their destination. In that sense, he limits their individuality and their free will. And that is because the jiva has not got complete independence. Some independence, not complete. So that limitation is put on them. That's how the Lord acts as supreme in comparison to the jivas. He allows their free will to act, but within the laws of karma in the material world. In the spiritual world, he doesn't have to do that. the limitation there. What is the limitation for the jivas there? In one sense, nothing. We can say it's limited by the existence of the Supreme Lord and his different shaktis like yoga, maya, potency. But it's not, doesn't serve as a limitation. That increases their bliss unlimitedly at all times. So it's not a limitation on them. And why he does that, why he frees them from all limitations is because he trusts them. They're completely dedicated to the Lord, so he says, okay, no limitations on you. So this is how the Lord operates in relation to the jiva. So he is also, he knows the destination of the jivas in the material world, according to the karma. He is the controller of everything, the regulator of everything. But it doesn't say he's the absolute controller. Ajaksha here is translated as regulator. So he allows your free wills to operate, but he regulates that in certain ways and puts the karma there also as a regulator. And it said here, Avishva and Vishva. The Lord is Avishva. And he is also Vishva, which literally means universe and not universe. The Lord is the universe and not the universe. So, contrary, as in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is in everything, but he's not in everything. He contains the universe, but he doesn't contain the universe. The Lord is the universe, the Lord isn't the universe. So these are contrary things. These are often mentioned in the Upanishads like this, as in Isopanishad. The Lord is far, but he is near. The Lord walks, but he does not walk. These are very common. So what this, what these contrary things do is show the impossibility of understanding all the nature of the Lord. Because for us it will look contrary. It's inconceivable, in other words. So the Lord can do things which are impossible for us to conceive of with our material minds. If we develop spiritually and understand, you know, Krishna and Atma and the difference in the material body, then we will to some extent understand that inconceivable nature. Because the same rules don't apply. Just as if one were to go to an upper planet like even Svargaloka, it's going to be very different from here. The rules are going to be different. Same rules of gravity and speed and whatever don't apply. It's inconceivable. And we're thinking everything is limited by the, you know, physical formulas of speed and dynamics and E equals MC squared and everything. And we've calculated our whole conception of things in terms of rules here. But if you go upwards into other planets, same rules are not going to apply. They can ignore those rules. Completely different. And if we go to the spiritual world, then it's completely different. And perceptions are completely different. Existence is completely different. So the soul does not have the same limitations and the same rules as this material world. A completely different substance. So what to speak of the Lord, who is the supreme soul? Completely different from everything. So therefore, inconceivable from a material point of view. And what is impossible for us is very possible for the Supreme Lord. So he is the universe and not the universe. And of course, this is all related again to material world. Vishva means material world. So the Lord is the material world in the sense he controls it and he knows it. He's the superintender of it. And all the jivas in it. So in that sense, he is the world. But at the same time, he's not the world because this is incidental. Material, all the material worlds, all the material universes, the billions and billions of universes are insignificant for the Lord. Because he's also in the spiritual world with billions of forms and billions of planets up there. And that's much more. And it's all spiritual lila. We don't have to involve with all the karma and all the material elements and all this inferiority of the material world at all. So it's Lord's detached. So he's not the material world. He's completely indifferent in one sense to it. And yet he's in it. How does he do it? So we explain that, of course, he Mahavishnu expands and Garbhadaksha Vishnu penetrates into the universe. And then Garbhadaksha expands and Kshirdaksha Vishnu. And then he enters each living entity. And encompasses each jiva, birth after birth, from beginning to end of the universe. So the Lord penetrates everywhere. And simultaneously somewhere else in the spiritual world, doing different things. Here he's looking at everybody's karmas as Paramatma. In the spiritual world, he doesn't think about karma at all. He's doing two opposite activities. Witnessing all the jivas in the material world and simultaneously in the spiritual world enjoying with his devotees. Different, completely different lila. And it's the same person, because we cannot say that Paramatma is different from Krishna. At the same time, it is different. He's doing something different. Function is different. So we cannot conceive how that is possible, like it would be like a schizophrenic or something, you know, doing two things at once. But for Krishna, no, he can do that. He expands himself into, even in spiritual forms, he can expand himself in so many forms, and they're all different and all the same at once. And we cannot imagine how it is so. Or, of course, even the Paramatma expands with each jiva in the material world. And how many jivas are here? And he witnesses all their activities, each one's activities, and he follows each one. And yet he's one also. So in this way, the Lord is the universe, because he's knowing everything and all the jivas and all their karmas. And at the same time, he's completely separate as Bhagavan in the spiritual world. No concern for the material world at all in that form. Krishna, when he's performing his pastimes, has no concern for creating material worlds or doing anything. He's simply involved with his devotees 100%. And yet, it's the same person doing two different things. That's his inconceivable nature. So it says here, he's drashta. He is the observer of everything. He observes. He's not involved. He's distant from it. And at the same time, he's not the observer at all, because he doesn't even look at it. When he's in his pastimes as Krishna, he doesn't even look. He is addressed as Paramatma. He's in it, but he does not participate in it. He looks at all the jivas, watches their activities, records them, but he does not involve in it. But as Krishna, no. He's separate. He's not looking at anything. When he's involved in the spiritual pastimes in the spiritual, he's not looking at anything here. He's only involved 100% with his devotees. So in this way, the wives of Kaliya are praising Krishna. Okay, any questions?
You mentioned that jivas have a free will, and similarly karmas. So how do we see this in connection to the animals? Because we say that there are no karmas for the animals.
Yeah, the free will operate as long as there is a level of intelligence by which you can take responsibility for your actions and recognize that I did this activity, I get this result. This result is not good because I'm getting, so therefore I shouldn't do that activity. It needs some higher intelligence, awareness, self-awareness, and awareness of things around us. That doesn't mean the animals don't have intelligence, but the level is not enough. They don't have that much self-awareness to understand that, okay, the lion kills the zebra, whatever, choose it. And he's not going to say, oh, this animal is suffering. He doesn't have that awareness. So their awareness, their intelligence, those abilities are less. So therefore, they don't get karmas for that. Even small babies, they don't get karma. And there's so many funny activities. They don't get karmas for those activities because their awareness is less at that stage. When they develop, then they get the responsibility for the acts.
So actually there is no free will.
Who said? For animals. Or plant? No. Well, there's free will to some extent. Well, it's a minimal because, yes, the animal smells something. I want to eat that. In that sense, it's free will. But, but to decide rationally, oh, this is good or this is bad, I should do this, I shouldn't do this because of this. No. Most of us are operating by reflexes of this is dangerous or not dangerous, so I'm hungry, therefore I should eat. Like that. Simple things. That's a type of intelligence, we can say, but not to the extent there's self-awareness and a sense of responsibility, etc.
Yes, so that there's discrimination there, or there's potential for discrimination, because we see so many people out there eating meat, and they don't think the animal suffers, even...
Yeah, well, yeah, I said that in the class, that actually they don't use their intelligence. There's a potential there, but they don't use it. Yeah, so therefore those people who continue in ignorance and then according to that do the worst activities, then they lose that possibility and become animals. Come down to a lower intelligence, so they don't want to use it properly. Huh? In one sense they have the intelligence, but they don't use it properly because of the mode of ignorance. Yeah, he is the Supreme Lord, so he can change anything. Huh? But during the pastimes, everything is enjoyment, and everything is guided by the different Shaktis, like the Samvit Shakti and the Haladini Shakti, etc. Huh? So he just lets them do, because he knows they're going to do everything right, because they're his Shaktis anyway, and they're his servants. He just lets them do, and he watches in amazement.
When a human enters back into the animal species, is there some residual karma to determine position they take?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like for instance, they say someone who kills a cow will remain in a cow body for that many hairs on the cow's back or something like that. You know, different statements like that. According to this sin, you get 5 lives as a pig or something, and then you come back to the human species. Or you know, there's different karmas and you get different animal bodies and whatever.
And they burn off that karma during the lives in the animal species.
Yeah, if that's their punishment or whatever, that's their karma. Then after the so many species like that, then they come back again, so many births.
What is it that determines their position as a human in the next human birth?
I suppose again, it's just the karma itself would determine that, the initial act and what they're going to get, you know, what type of life they're going to get.
We're talking about how the different shaktis of Krishna works. And we see it when the cowboys go to they enter the mouth of Akasura, then Krishna becomes momentarily perplexed.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
I just explained that in the class. You weren't here, maybe. Yeah. He was perplexed because he saw his energies acting. Yeah. And he said, wow. I can't do anything. I'm trying to get the cowboys not to go in the mouth, and still they're going in, and I can't say anything, I can't do anything. And he said, oh, it's my Leela Shakti acting, and Leela Shakti wants me to do something else here, have some other pastime. So therefore, okay, I'll let them go in, and I'll go in, and I'll save them. So he was astonished, not because he was powerless in one sense, he was astonished at the cleverness of his Leela Shakti.
Yes, I think we perform partial steps, we should have the consciousness like the Shaktis, that we should want to please Krishna.
Well, the very basis of the very definition of bhakti is that we do service only with the intention of trying to please Krishna. That's the very basis of all bhakti. And when we say, you know, offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, whatever, that has to be the mood or the intention behind it. Then it's called bhakti. If that's not there, it's not called bhakti, even if we offer the leaf and the fruit and the flower. It may be mixed bhakti or karma or whatever, but it's not called uttama bhakti, which leads to service to Krishna, dasya, sakya, all these different rasas. It'll lead to somewhere else, if that's not there.
Sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam says the perfection of life is vanashram.
The what?
The perfection.
Yeah. Well, there's an explanation of that by in the Nectar Devotion there. I think Jiva Goswami explains that if we just call Varnashram Dharma, it's more or less like karma, right? Which is like karma yoga in Bhagavad Gita. Where Krishna says you do karma yoga, follow your duties and varnas, etc. That's karma yoga. And of course, Lord Chaitanya is talking about pure bhakti and not even karma, Mr. Bhakti, whatever. So the explanation for those verses by Jiva Goswami, and Vishwanath also says the same thing, is that when they say that this is for the people who are not qualified for pure bhakti, they don't have that faith yet. But at least, because they're following that varnashram system, and in the varnashram system there is worship of Vishnu, that's the best activity they can do. So for those type of people, that is the best thing. If you develop faith in the Lord, then you can also give up even the varnashram activities and just do bhakti. And there's no sin incurred. So Krishna says, Sarvadharma Prajna, and Aham Tam Sarvapapi Vimokshasyami. I free you from all sins. So there's no sin involved in giving it up if one has qualification for bhakti. If one doesn't, then he says, do it. And by that you can become purified and gradually your faith can develop. So varnashram system without the worship of the Lord, of course, that's useless. Has the use of it. If it has the Lord in it, then that's the best thing for these people. And it's pleasing to the Lord. That toshakarana. Anyone with faith in the Lord? And he gets the mercy of devotees? Well, of course, in the Bhagavatam, it is said that to the extent that you have material attachments, to that extent you would participate in the varnashram to some degree. So in other words, we can't just say, oh, a little faith, like a reject everything and just do 100% surrender, because most people can't do that. Though Krishna says, Sarvadharma Prajjamamikam Saranam Vraja, most people cannot really come to that platform because they're not qualified for it. So he allows for participation in the vashram on the varnashram system to some degree. But those rules that you follow as a devotee should not contradict, like worship of devatas, that should be rejected. So you'll follow the rules for household life or whatever. If you have material attachments for wife and children, okay, get married, follow the rules of varnashram rather than no rules. And those rules which are not contradictory to bhakti in there. And that's so you don't do the strata rites to the pitras and the worship the devatas and ask for material things and do all that. And simultaneously you do bhakti to the extent that you can. And the more you develop, of course, then the less attraction you have for varnashram. And then you get more renounced, you can say. And then you renounce your house and whatever, your family life, and take vanaprastha or something, and then you become more renounced. And then at a certain point, you can give up all varnas and all ashramas and simply worship the Lord.
So as long as there's material attachments, you have to engage in varnashram
to some extent. In a sense, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that that's at the stage where one is actually quite steady in bhakti, then we won't even call it varnashram. He says they're gona vidhi, secondary activities of bhakti involving the body, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, society, relationships, etc. And those rules are taken from the varnashram system, like taking a bath, for instance. And since we have a body, and if we don't clean the body, then we get sick. If we get sick, generally our mind gets affected. If our mind gets affected, we can't practice bhakti properly. So therefore, cleanliness is good for bhakti. But it doesn't produce bhakti, like nam, chanting the holy name, or hearing, whatever. You could take baths for a million years and not get have bhakti. So it doesn't cause bhakti. So in that sense, it's not considered bhakti mainly. But because it's favorable, then it's considered a secondary rule of bhakti. And those rules are taken from varnashram. And similarly, as I said, for household life, for relationships between people and the family, then follow the varnashramic rules for that. To raise the family, whatever. As long as they're not contradicted to varnashram. So things related to the body and family and everything, you take from that. And he calls them secondary rules of bhakti. And they're favorable for devotional development.
Maharaj, what is the child become responsible for his action? Some people throw stones, you know, on the train, on the legs, and
Well, at that age, the parents are responsible. So they have to take the karmas, I think.
So what age the child becomes?
When they're mature, let's say 17, 18, maybe when they get their voting rights or someone on that age, I suppose. Of course, it's a gradual process. When they're, 3 years old, we can't expect much. When they're 5 years old, we can expect them to a little more. And when they're 10 years old, of course, we expect them not to steal and, like that. But, when they're really mature and their varnas are manifested, what qualities are there, and their varnas become fixed and whatever, then at that time you can say that they're fully responsible. But I would think, I don't know about Shastra, I don't have read anything in Shastra exactly when, but I think it's more of a gradual process. Huh? Well, when they're babies, obviously, we can't blame them for anything. Okay.